Let us join in a spirit of prayer with words from Kathleen McTeague. Spirit of life and love, God of many names, here in the refuge of this Sabbath home, we turn our busy minds toward silence and our full hearts toward one another. We move together through the mysteries, the bright surprise of birth, and the shadowed questions of death. In our slow walk between the two, we will be wounded and we will be showered with grace, amazing and unending. Even in our sorrow, we feel our lives cradled in holiness we cannot comprehend. This holy place in which we gather, we make a sanctuary and name our home. Into this home, we bring our hunger for awakening. We bring compassionate hearts and a will toward justice. Into this home, we bring the courage to walk on after hard losses. Into this home, we bring our joy and gratitude for ordinary blessings. Let us hold this moment in silence. So be it, and amen.
Our ancient reading is from Genesis chapter 1, verses 1 to 5. In the beginning, when God created the heavens and the earth was a formless void, and darkness covered the face of the deep, while a wind from God swept over the faces of the waters. When God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. And God saw that the light was good. And God separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And there was evening, and there was morning, the first day. Our modern reading is a traditional Japanese story as recounted by Jean Deasy. The Japanese master Nenin once hosted a renowned professor who wanted to discuss the basic concepts of Zen. The professor freely shared his ideas while Nenin prepared tea. Then Nenin began serving. He poured his visitor's cup full and kept pouring, so the tea overflowed onto the table. Still, he kept pouring. The professor, stunned, burst out, "But it is full! No more will go in." "You are full," Nenin said, "full of your own opinions and speculations. How can I show you Zen unless you first empty your cup?"
Perhaps if you are like me, you will understand Unitarian Universalist minister David Blanchard when he says, "I'm a collector, not really of specific things, but of things in general. My collections range from things that have value to things that are as ordinary as stone. Well, some of them are stones. The garage sale for me is a source of great temptation. When I should be donating that suit that I bought for my first job 16 years ago, I'm afraid it will be I going home with someone's slightly worn but cozy sports jacket. I should be thinning out my book collection, but I will be unable, I know, to resist what others have managed to part with." I'm completely able to empathize with Reverend Blanchard, for better or for worse. If you have seen my desk at busy times of the year, you might say it's for worse. The fact is that for the past few months, I've been taking a hard look at my affinity for clutter, what could be called my comfort with chaos. I began reading about it, and with some surprise, discovered that I was actually dealing with a spiritual issue. When I realized the spiritual nature of my affliction, I decided I might best be able to help myself and possibly some members of our congregation by bringing the issue of being organized to all of you in the form of this sermon. You might say I was hoping to change my practices if I preached. Or maybe I was hoping that if I talked with you about getting organized, I would have an entire congregation to keep me accountable. After all, I believe that a community of accountability can help us fulfill our ideals. I'd like to start with a few humorous questions about home organization and cleaning that I found in a book by Don Aslett called How Do I Clean the Moose Head? Here's one. Do dust ruffles really serve any purpose? How about other people's dirt? Is it as bad as we all imagine? Can you clean the outside of the windows without going outside? What if my cleaning tool is dirtier than the thing I am cleaning? And finally, is it cheaper to repaint than to clean? Now, before going any further, I wonder if there are any others out there in the congregation who admit to suffering from this malaise. I think I'm in good company. Are there any people here who are able to keep from being cluttered? What is your solution? Please share with us at coffee hour. Here's the way it works for me. I was on a continuing education committee for UU ministers a few years ago. The residue from that work was a huge three-ring binder full of notes. It sits on a shelf in my home office, and I see it every day when I meditate. Every once in a while, I think, I'm never going to need this information again. It's history. I should recycle this paper. Or better yet, I should be in touch with the UU Ministers Association administrator and see if she thinks there's any value in it to the association. But do I email her? This is how it goes. Every once in a while, I sense a sense of disorganization rises to the level of panic. Recently, to get some help with this, I consulted with a couple of folks from our congregation who are in the business of helping people get organized. Lynn Eve Berkowitz, who owns a business called Next Phase Senior Relocation Services, and Valerie Marcus Ramscher, who calls herself the Get It Done Gal. Valerie's advice is to separate our needs from our wants. She points out that there is really so little that we need. I thought about that for a few weeks when Rob and I spent some time at the shore. Life at the shore is simple for us. We get up and ride our bikes in the morning, have lunch, go to the beach and swim and read in the afternoon. In the evening, it's dinner, usually out, and then a movie, a ball game on TV, or a stroll on the boardwalk. What more could we need? What more could we really want? There's just not that much required for living an idyllic life. Lynn Eve says she loves repurposing and redecorating. She discovered her aptitude for this when friends called upon her and asked her to come over and help them clean their apartment. Then later on, when she was caring for her elderly mother, she hired a person to help her move into an assisted living. The person was unscrupulous. Lynn Eve knew that she could do the job better. She knew that she could help people and not hurt them. So she decided to start a business that would help seniors when they have to relocate. She's learned a lot over the years. She says it's important to sort through your stuff long before you find yourself packed to the rafters. No need to try to get it all done at once. Just deal with one box or one shelf a day. If you haven't used something in a certain period of time, it's time to give it up. Sell it or pay it forward. That is, give it to someone who will find value in it. Say the vets, Big Brothers and Big Sisters, or the Salvation Army. Above all, she says, if you keep something, use it. Go ahead, wear it out, enjoy it. That's why you have it in the first place. It's vital to use the things that you love. Don't put them on a shelf or in the basement. Not enjoying them is the sin. Enjoy every moment. Live for today, plan for tomorrow. Lynn Eve has learned so much about people through her business. By talking to seniors she works with, she discovered that their things are a reflection of their life experiences. These are things that brought value to their lives. Unfortunately, Lynn Eve says, she often finds that her clients' children don't see the value in things that hold so much value and so many memories for the parents. And this is a loss. Where the kids may just want to get rid of things, Lynn Eve takes the time to listen to people's experiences with a fresh set of ears. She allows time for reminiscing. She gives her clients the space to begin letting go. Letting go, or detaching, is a very spiritual concept, but it's not an easy one. It's an acceptance that our things do not make us who we are. They don't define us. We have inherent worth and dignity, and our things, or lack of things, don't change that. Detaching from our things means stretching ourselves beyond our comfort zone. Believe me, I know it kind of feels good to have all these familiar things around us, even if the house is getting a bit crowded. But then when we do something that we didn't think that we could do, like sorting and unloading things that we thought we couldn't part with, it feels even better. I personally get a surprising sense of accomplishment when my home is more zen-like. Take the best of the best, the experts say, and let the rest of it go. But whatever decluttering process you use, make sure you have some fun with it. Deal with it, clean it out before the time comes when uncluttering is full of unnecessary pressure, strain, and stress. And consider that it will be a gift to your children if you do it before they have to. UCLA recently completed a study on cluttering in the American lifestyle and reported on it in the Boston Globe. It said that American families are overwhelmed by clutter. They can't even park their cars in the garage because it's crammed with stuff. The researchers were disheartened to see what we have gotten ourselves into. Here is one of their findings. A refrigerator door cluttered with magnets, calendars, family photos, phone numbers, and sports schedules generally indicates the rest of the home will be in a similarly chaotic state. Researchers were struck by the number of toys American children have managed to score from parents, grandparents, and friends. Our country has 3.1% of the world's children and 40% of its Little Tykes Easy Score basketball hoops. Children don't often play with these toys. They would rather be in front of the television watching commercials for more toys. One mother interviewed for the article reported that toys seem to multiply by themselves. Her children have outgrown many of their toys, but she can't seem to give them away. I'm saving them for my grandchildren, she says, even though her own children are in middle school and high school. That means that she plans to store the toys for a decade or more. The worst part, even while she was being interviewed, the mom was pushing her bulging shopping cart toward the store's cash register. People's homes are the core of any society, according to the UCLA report. So if we want a neat, streamlined, smooth-functioning society, it has to begin at home. For many of us, the question is, how do we start? Erin Dolan, author of Unclutter Your Life in 1 Week, and editor-in-chief of unclutter.com website, you'll find some helpful questions from her book in your order of service. I thought you might like to take it home. I've been quite inspired and perhaps will have a conversion experience around having read this book. She tells us that uncluttering actually begins with meditation. She invites us to close our eyes for a moment, to take a couple of deep breaths. Let your mind fill with all the things that make you happy. Relax and focus on the good things in life. We can take a moment to do that right now. Begin by breathing deeply, and then just think about the good things in your life. What comes to mind? What faces do you see? Perhaps those of friends and family. What are you doing? Where are you? And why do these things bring you such happiness? Erin encourages us to make a list of those happy things: family, friends, hobbies, personal time, good health, career, vacationing, spirituality. And why should we make such a list? This list is your motivation, your reason for beginning to remove the other things from your life, the things that you may be holding on to but don't really need or want. The list is yours, uniquely your own, so you can be honest with yourself. It will help remind you about the things that matter most in life, so you can remove the things that don't. Erin has a step-by-step decluttering process. She strongly recommends it. She says that becoming a declutterer gives you more room in your life for the things that you really care about. By keeping the clutter out of her life, Erin feels that she makes room for building a remarkable one. Can we build a more remarkable life by getting rid of our stuff? Perhaps you remember the George Carlin routine about stuff. He said, "Actually, this is just a place for my stuff. That's all you need in life, a little place for your stuff. This is my stuff, that's your stuff, that'll be his stuff over there. That's all your house is, just a place to keep your stuff. If you didn't have so much stuff, you wouldn't need a house. You could just walk around all the time. A house is just a pile of stuff with a cover on it. You can see that when you're taking off in an airplane. You look down, you see everybody's got a little pile of stuff." But maybe that's not the whole truth. In addition to being a place for your stuff, a home is a place of shelter and warmth. A place of authentic relationships, gathering, generosity, and care. A place of memories and dreams. To have a home is to be grateful. And gratitude is grounded in spirituality. Home is sacred. To look at a space in which we live as sacred space, rather than simply a space for our stuff, brings on a whole new meaning. What do we want in our space? Do the things there give us a sense of serenity, or help us get closer to the holy. When we are thinking about bringing new things into this holy space, it can help to ask ourselves, is it worthy? In the art of feng shui, everything is alive. Everything has energy. Perhaps it is worth asking, what kind of energy would this new object bring into my home? Let us begin to develop a new relationship with the land our houses are built upon, and with our homes and our belongings. Let us treat life itself as the sacred gift that it is, and honor the places that we occupy as holy ground. We can begin by making friends with our homes. We can consciously create the environment in which we want to live. We can intentionally create a place that will help us live in harmony with the spirit of life. May this home and your home be strong in the face of storms, be wide to welcome the stranger, have space enough to bring us peace and rest, to hold our hopes and dreams. May the sacred fill this home and your home, infusing our lives that we may carry peace and justice as we go. As we extinguish our chalice, our worship has ended. Let our service begin.